Welcome back to New Money. Those that stayed with us, thanks for staying with us. And those who've just joined us, we're discussing investments this evening. My guests are Oren Tambo and Craig Pfeiffer. You can call me on 011-480-4068. I'll repeat that, 011-484-0468. You can email me at brian@bdtv.co.za. I'm going straight to emails. Email from Terry in Scarborough. He says, the Rand has been firm. What is your outlook for the currency? And would, if you were underweight offshore, take money out for the strong rand and buy into offshore markets that have been weaker? Craig?
Yes, I think that aligns with what we were saying a bit earlier. The rand has benefited from a couple of tailwinds at the moment. The trade surplus, which is fed into a positive current account surplus, or a current account surplus, that is for me one structural pillar of the rand, and that's been strong. The other side is around what happens to the fiscus, government's finances. Those, when we had the budget, generally also been better than expected. We're looking at smaller budget deficits for this year and the years ahead. So that was a bit of good news, helped by the tailwinds of those higher commodity prices that boosted revenues and taxes and the like. So maybe it's just a bit of a once-off. Or maybe we have a bit more this year. But, a decent looking or an improved fiscal position, a good current account position, both of those things helping, I think, to support the currency now in the shorter term. That commodity boom isn't going to last forever. So that's going to see, lower revenues from that part of the taxpaying base in time. So that might, renew pressure on the fiscal balance. And then also with those commodity prices coming off in time, you'll see a lower trade balance, current account, potentially also going to deficit over time. So this current strength, those two pillars might be a little weaker in time to come. So I would, a long story short, I would take advantage of the stronger rand at the moment and look for those opportunities offshore.
Okay, before I went off air, I spoke about inflation, high interest rates. I mean, just let's go back 2 years. I mean, trillions of dollars were invested in the markets to keep the economy going, keep it alive. Now we've got interest rates rising. One of the fears of interest rate rising is that the economy can't withstand it, and therefore you run into recession. What's the likelihood, Craig?
Well, that's the balancing act that central banks have to have. As as economies go through cycles, they put up rates, when inflation is rearing its ugly head and growth is booming, and they hope to turn the knob very, carefully so that they just push the rates up enough so that the economy does stop from overheating, starts cooling down, but then they have to quickly reverse and get that balance right. So I think it's very finely poised at the moment. The interest rate markets are telling you that, or potentially pointing to a recession and growth actually going negative in the US. The economy, though, is very strong at the moment. The wage the labor market also very strong, and that's also potentially driving inflation and causing the Fed a couple of jitters. But they might, if they're very careful, they can engineer it so that we don't get a recession there. But it's probably, I'm not a betting person in that regard, but it's probably a 70% chance of a recession at the moment. It's looking more than not, but if I had to, I would say that they could probably escape a recession. But it's painted in the foggy mists of the future there.
Are you on the same page or on a different page?
Well, I totally agree with Craig there, because I think the key issue is the backdrop at which the economy is coming from, right? So if you look at the beginning of the year, we just use the US because it's the biggest economy in the world, right? At the beginning of the year, we're looking at the economy growing at as much as 5%. And the question is, what is the potential growth for the US economy? I think some put it around 1.2%. So what that means essentially is that the Fed has got a lot of wiggle room to essentially put some brakes on the economy without actually getting to a point whereby you could see employment being a huge problem. So I think one number that I usually look at and that gives me a bit of comfort is when you look at the labor market. At the moment, you're having about 1.8 jobs in the US per one unemployed person. So essentially what you can do is you can wipe off the 0.8 and still you won't have a significant impact on the in terms of the employment in the US. So that's a key issue. So the way we're looking at it is from with our investment team is the fact that probably we're going to have it maybe at some point, depending on how stubborn inflation is going to be. Because if inflation remains very stubborn, it means that the Fed might actually have to continue hiking interest rates, maybe to the point whereby they could actually hit the economy. But we don't see that happening during this year. We're probably going to see it happen maybe sometime next year or even the year after.
Oren, quite a big week this week. We've got a lot of American companies starting to report first quarter results, leading towards the end of the month when the technology companies, your expectations, likely to see a good quarter?
Yeah, I think so what we're watching essentially when you're looking into these numbers, one of the issues is the impact in terms of cost, because when you look at the previous earnings season, we've seen a lot of companies starting to complain about the supply chain issues. I think we've seen at some point with Apple essentially indicating that they're probably not going to be able to meet some of their revenue estimations because of the fact that they cannot get products, their phones to their customers. So we're looking at that. It's actually a very important aspect that we're looking at. But generally, when you look at market estimations in terms of earnings, I think we are expecting most of the companies to beat whatever the market is expecting, because we haven't seen some of the things, because there's always a lag in terms of whatever is happening currently in terms of the point in time when it's going to filter through in terms of earnings, and we don't expect to see that at this point.
And very important, I mean, it's not only just the earnings, Craig, it's actually the comments made behind those earnings.
Yes, the comments and the forward-looking guidance that management provides. So sometimes you can coldly look at a statement or a headline on a Reuters or a Bloomberg or something, and it says companies beaten on the revenue line, they've beaten on the earnings per share, they announce more buybacks, and the share price collapsed in a heap on the day. And then you read the guidance and they said, well, going forward, things are going to look a lot bleaker, there's more pressures, cost pressures or whatever they are. But that guidance is all important. And I think to Oren's point, I mean, there is a bit of momentum coming through here, but earnings globally probably grew something like 50% last year, and we'd probably think something like 7 or 8% growth for this year. So it's going to slow down dramatically, but I think the good news is it's still going to be positive.
Will it satisfy the market?
I think the market's come around to that way of thinking. So I guess to your point, it's around that guidance.
Craig, what type of companies are you looking at over the next month? What industries are you going to be looking at to give you some of this guidance in terms of way forward?
Well, I think internationally, we're looking for those companies that are going to still show recover or show ongoing longer-term growth. So there's a semiconductor shortage at the moment. I think you can look a little bit in that space at those companies that might be the ones that come out on top there. The companies that are recovering from the lockdown, maybe in the aerospace side, the theme parks, the Disneys, the Comcasts, but those also have a media element and a streaming element, which is another story as well. But I think there's a lot of things you can look out for.
Okay, Oren, Denise in Hartbay wants you to answer this question. There's been a lot of talk about the U.S. yield curb inversion. Can you please explain what this means? Yields on investment-grade bonds have ticked up significantly over the few weeks. Do you think this is the right time to invest in South African bonds, and what do you think of global bonds?
Yeah, so I think maybe to answer the first question first, in terms of the yield curve, the first part, what do you mean by the yield curve? So I think this is one of the graphs that is used by financial economies. Essentially, they'll be plotting the yield of a bond versus its maturity. So if you've got the bond market, you find that we've got different maturities of bonds. In the US, it goes up to around 30 years. So what they do is they take a one-year bond and then plot it against the yield. So normally, that curve is supposed to be upward sloping. That's the normal curve. But I think what has happened more recently is the fact that when you look at the two-year bond versus the 10-year bond, the two-year bond was yielding higher than the 10-year bond. So that's sort of the inversion. It has tilted a little bit. And why is that problematic? Is because investors would need to be compensated for, you know, the higher risk that they hold in the longer term bonds because of the term premium. So that has been the issue. And then just moving quickly to in terms of how we're feeling about
bonds.
About global bonds. So, you know, we've been very bearish on that as a class for a very long time, but we are starting to sort of warm up to it a little bit. We haven't even started moving on it. But the key issue here is when you look at it, we look at it from an absolute investment case point of view and a relative investment case of point of view. We think that from an absolute investment case, it has improved because the prices have derated a little bit. But still, when you compare the return that we think we can get from global bonds versus what you can get from equities, we still think that equities would trump bonds in that case.
And a quick comment from UK, local bonds?
Local bonds, I think, do have a place in your local portfolio, your local multi-asset portfolio. I think you can get some good yields there. Sort of that 10, 12, 13-year part of the yield curve, I think, is particularly attractive. So I don't think you should neglect them. I think it is a good place to look for interest income particular.
Well, I'm sorry to all those emails that I didn't answer this evening. We always get so many emails in between the gaps. I'll certainly deal with them in the next program. The market movement we are currently experiencing is quite normal. I know this is hard to believe. However, it happens all the time. The world is not likely to collapse, although there have been corrections. Those invested for the last 5 years have had far better returns over this period than they could ever expected. Investors need to get perspective on their portfolios. If you're looking for long-term growth, stay invested, and if you've got available cash, look to top up quality stocks at lower levels. For those looking for income, there are quite a few alternatives, and I suggest you discuss these with a financial planner. Oren, Craig, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Thanks, Brian.
It's important to note our program this evening is to provide information and should not be construed as advice. Next week's program, we'll be dealing with financial and retirement planning. If you need to get hold of me, my details will appear on the screen. Thank you for watching and good night.